Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of George Kelly, and we're going to be talking about the bankruptcy of the United States. Mr. Kelly, are you there? Well, could you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and how it came that you came to write the book?
Well, I've been down here in Clearwater for about 30 years, and I have a newsstand here. And
can you speak up just a little louder, please?
I live in Clearwater, Florida. I've been down here, and I've run a business in a newsstand for about 20 years. And effectively, I do a lot of reading, and when you do a lot of reading, you can't help but see what's going on. So, I mean, years ago, you can see things. As long as you're looking, you can see. But if you're not looking, you'll never see. Unfortunately, I have the liberty and the luxury of being able to do a lot of reading, so I can see things in my mind are coming. And what we've been doing here lately is just going off the cliff in varying degrees. And whether we turn left or turn right, it seems that there's cliffs all around us. And I ended up, the last piece I wrote, I believe I sent you a copy, was called Bankrupt, which basically said that's where we are. And if we want to get out of that condition that we're in, we have to really sit back and say, okay, we are bankrupt, and let's get out of it. And the way we get out of it is do this, this, and this. They talked about, you know, a stimulus program and stuff like that, but it's not, if you have a donkey, there's two ends to the donkey. And if you stimulate the wrong end of the donkey, you get covered in doo-doo. Basically, you cannot stimulate consumption, you have to stimulate production. And to do that, you don't have to throw a lot of money at things. You can just put tax, you know, different tax credits and stuff like that. So if someone starts a business, what you want is new levels of production. If someone starts a business, give them a tax credit to get things going again. But we don't seem to know how to do that. We just seem to think we know how to keep spending money and racking up our debt. And the last little piece I wrote called Bankrupt, I quoted from the USA Today, which basically said that the average family has a debt right now of almost over $500,000. And that doesn't include the debt levels of the state and the counties and the city and everything else like that. So we've gone beyond just squandering money. I mean, we have no more money left to squander, so what we're doing now is printing more money. And they call it monetizing the debt, they call it this and they call it that. But basically it's a fool's errand, because the more money must reflect the productive capabilities of the society. And if you print more money than reflects your actual productive capabilities, you just get inflation and you get hyperinflation. And in the end, what's a dollar worth? I mean, if it gets to the point that a dollar is not worth a dollar, then you'll see a loss of confidence, which is beyond most people's level to comprehend. In a nutshell, that's it. We're broken. We don't want to acknowledge it. But the first step out of bankruptcy is to acknowledge that that's where you are. The first step in any condition, negative condition, is to say this is the condition we're in. Let's confront it and let's get on with it.
Well, I certainly concur with you. The difficulty is that most Americans really don't understand the implications of what's going on today. They don't understand what happens when a nation goes bankrupt. I mean, we've never had the destruction of the value of our currency, but it's happened repeatedly in South America during the last 20 or 30 years, and it's happened in other countries. It happened recently in Zimbabwe under American auspices, where they totally destroyed the value of the currency, and it was up to literally trillions of dollars, you know, the inflation rate.
Doctor, the first one I think that you probably read was, it was a piece I wrote called On the Road to Zimbabwe, which I wrote in November. Now, there was an interesting story behind it. I wrote it, and one of my customers came in one day, and I handed him a copy of it, and I said, well, in the past, I used to have some money, and I used to, if I wanted to make an argument, I would just buy a page in the Washington Post. So about an hour goes by, he comes back, and I said, well, it costs about $10,000 a page. So he comes back, and he hands me a bag. So I put the bag under the counter, because Linda was at the post office. She came back, and I opened up the bag, and here was $10,000. So then I put On the Road to Zimbabwe as a full-page ad in the Washington Post, National Weekly Edition, in January. But now, 4 or 5 months later, people are basically saying exactly what I said.
Hold that thought, George. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And our guest this afternoon is George Kelly, who comes from Florida. We actually came in contact with him because he ran a full-page ad in the Washington Post. And it's, you know, it's an expensive proposition to do that. And I thought, here's a man who feels very, very deeply about what's going on in our society. And apparently somebody down there, one of his customers, he runs a business down in that area, and one of his customers had supplied the funds to run that full-page ad. The American people have to understand that everything our leaders are doing is designed to make matters worse, not to solve the problem. We got into the problem because we had excessive spending, we had excessive debt, and of course, what are they doing? Why are they trying to create more debt and more spending? And you don't solve a problem that came about by spending, you know, by increasing spending. What we need, of course, is savings and production, not spending and consumption. And so George is with us this afternoon. His latest essay is simply Bankruptcy. The United States is fiscally bankrupt. Certainly, the gentleman of Richard Fisher, who is the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, recently wrote an article, and he said, you know, a lot of people say the federal debt, national debt, is about $65 trillion. But here at the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank, we figure that the federal debt and the state debt and the pension debt and all the other debts, the agency like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you compile all of these debts, that is really closer to $99 trillion. Well, there's only about $55 trillion in the whole world in the value of everything. So there's no way we can ever repay our debt, and we're bankrupt. And that is the point that George made. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Doctor, I go back here. One of the first things I wrote, I never did send you a copy of it, but I'll read it to you because it's only a couple of paragraphs. It was probably written almost a year ago. It was called Bernanke's Hole. It simply says, doesn't the first law of holes simply say that when you find yourself in one, a hole, in other words, you should stop digging? Well, maybe someone can help me out here a bit. The proximate cause of the subprime mess and the resultant credit crunch was cheap money. Beginning in 2000 at 6%+, the Federal Reserve rate plunged to 1% in 2003, and then the games began. Cheap money and cheap credit fueled an unwarranted level of growth and set in motion an imbalance that could only lead to a fall. It is one thing to fall into a hole. It is another thing altogether to plunge into the abyss. When people perceive and or believe that the cause, cheap money, is also the cure, there will in the end be hell to pay.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
The last line I said was hell of a job, Ben.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. And, of course, our guest this afternoon is George Kelly, who runs a business down in Clearwater, Florida. And he writes essays about what's going on. He's written an essay, at least one, that appeared in the Washington Post, bought a full-page ad in the Washington Post, which is circulated across America. I had the opportunity to read it, and I agreed totally with what he said about the financial situation America is in today. And, of course, what they're doing is they're simply monetizing our debt. They call it quantitative easing. And it's a fancy name for simply creating money. Now, they don't print the money. Everybody gets mixed up. They don't print the money. They simply create it as a bookkeeping entry. They call it credit. And the reason that they no longer provide the M3, that's the monetary M3 accounting of what's happening to money and credit, is because they don't want the American people to know they're destroying the value of our currency. And George has written a recent essay that simply says, we are bankrupt, and we are. So what needs to be done, George?
Well, in any problem, problems are really pretty simple. There's only two fundamental conditions when you look at a problem, right? You give me an example here. You're driving down the road, the car stops. Okay, it stops because you have a bad coil. The way you solve that problem is the way you solve any single problem. You ask questions, you get answers. Based on the available answers, you ask more questions until you spot the source of the problem. In this case, it's the bad coil. So you change it. So in this case, now we have a situation of bankruptcy. People know, I mean, there's only two ways you're going to go here. Like I said earlier about the donkey, you're either going to enhance the elements of production or you're going to try and spend your way out through consumption. That has never worked and never will work. You have to emphasize, you know, how we're going to stimulate this. And the stimulus should be always 100% directed towards increases in the elements of production. Production in this society, actual physical manufacturing production, last year was estimated to be 13% of gross domestic product. It's probably down towards 10. We need, in a heck of a hurry, to figure out how to make things, how to get something which we can actually exchange with the rest of the world for real money. Not some funny money credits and stuff like that that you can play games with in the banking system, but actual production. Most of our production, it seems, has just gone overseas. Excuse me. And we have to sit there, and like Rahm Emanuel says, you know, we can't let this little screw up go by without making some changes. But the changes we need to make are not the changes that they're attempting to make, which all basically, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, they seem to want to spend their way out of the hole. You can't do that. You have to produce your way out of the hole. There's a fundamental philosophy that they don't seem to want to grasp. I guess maybe because they had things too easy in their own life. But you have to pull back, cut back, and spend the money in the right condition. But we're not. We're just printing more money, effectively, whether you call it credit or printing money or anything else like that, in the illusion or the delusion that somehow, some way, it's all going to come up right. It defies belief. You don't know whether to call these, you know, what's an appropriate name to call these people, because stupid just doesn't seem to make it.
Well, maybe they really don't want to solve the problem. Maybe they have a different worldview. Maybe they want to build up the economy of the rest of the world as they tear down our economy and lower our living standards. There's some people who really think that we have too high a living standard, and the world would be a lot better off if the American people were poorer, that way that, Chris, the facilities, the wealth of our nation could be transferred to other countries, and that's certainly covered in something called the Earth Charter, which is available up on the internet. Nobody ever talks about it, but it's really what's going on today.
Well, what they're basically saying, but then I don't know whether to accept that argument, because basically when we're back in the 16th century, you know, nobody's come ahead. You can have all the money in the world, but if you're living in a world that you don't want to live in, what have you gained? You know, I mean, these people, I don't even give them credit enough to be smart enough to pull something stupid like that, because I just think they're fundamentally stupid. They're just basically ignorant people. I mean, you cannot, I mean, as a business person or something else like that, you can't run down to the basement and print your own money. You can't keep yourself in business by not being in business. But the business of government, in the way it's going right now, it's all over the block. I mean, it's just the biggest entity that man has ever known, but it's a non-productive entity. And somehow, some way, some shape, you have to make people aware that you have to change the fundamental element of government. It's there to supervise the production of the society, but it's not there to shepherd it or say this is right and that is wrong. It just doesn't work. Everything the man has ever known, you look at the history of it, we had the best system, but in the last 8 to 10 years, it's gone totally south. One of the pieces I wrote, which, you know, I talked about the failure of the way this thing got down there, but the ultimate failure was the failure that they didn't let capitalism be capitalism. Because the fundamental difference between capitalism and other systems of government is capitalism actually looks forward to failure. It looks at failure as an opening to a new beginning. But instead of, like, when you look at General Motors, General Motors should have went bankrupt 8, 10, 15 years ago. And then what have we done? We're down where we should have been 8 years ago, except for $60 billion short. I mean, how do you come ahead like that? You can't. When things fail, just let them fail. One of the ones I wrote here, I got so many things I've written here. I talked about, you know, the financial failure and how it all began, and how it all began with Mr. Paulson, who at one time ran Goldman Sachs, and he put $20 billion in AIG. When he got to be the Treasury Secretary and AIG looked like it was going to go south, he ran to George Bush and said, the sky is falling, we need to bail out AIG. In other words, we need to protect my $20 billion investment in AIG. So the next thing you know, the American taxpayer is on the hook for $180 billion in an outfit called AIG, which is basically a reinsurance company. But the debts and obligations of AIG, which we now own 80% of, may easily total $1.2 trillion. All of this started with a guy by the name of Paulson with a $20 billion bet in AIG when he was head of Goldman Sachs. I mean, people don't want to see the personal aspect of it, but from $20 billion, now we're over $1 trillion that the American taxpayer is on the hook. We can't even be, like you said, when you total them up in your prior segment there, you said you were getting close to $100 trillion. I didn't think it was that big. I figured it was more like 70, 75. But even at that kind of numbers, it is beyond belief. And if we don't stop back and step back and take a real good look and say, okay, we need to get real here and start at the very basics. But, I mean, I don't see that happening. I just see them. Now they're talking about, I don't know how many more billions or trillions of dollars they want to spend on Medicare because it's going to somehow save money. Do that when you have the money in hand, but we don't have the money in hand. We have to get real, and I just unfortunately don't see it. So I print and write these things and put them on my website and hope for the best, because if enough people realize it and they can see it in writing, not just verbally, because the problem with the verbal communication, sometimes it's in one ear and out the other. So I try and put it in writing in simple terms that the average 10th grade student can understand. Because like I said, if you talk to an economist and you ask them basic questions, they'll babble on for days on end and you'll never understand what they're talking about. But it's really, really, it's so stupid and so simple, you just shake your head that it's going so far south.
But of course, George, it is simple and it is straightforward. And the solutions are there. So why do our leaders refuse to do what's logical? Our telephone number, if you're out there in the listening audience, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 right here at Radio Liberty. If you have a question or comment, why 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and there's no question that everything you say is correct. Actually, the figure that was put out by the head of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, Mr. Richard Fisher, I believe is his name, was $90 trillion that were in debt. But the difference between 65 trillion and 90 trillion is so unimaginable. People can't even understand how much $1 trillion is, much less, you know, 55 or 65 or 90 trillion dollars. But they know what they're doing. The people in charge are not stupid people. I mean, Mr. Paulson are not stupid. They are intentionally transferring the wealth of America overseas. We are financing General Motors. We're already given General Motors $20 billion. We're going to give them another $30 billion. And they're going to start shutting plants down here in the United States. At the same time, they're going to start opening plants in China and in Russia and in Brazil. Why would we be giving money to a manufacturer that is opening plants overseas but doesn't have any money to keep our plants open here? That just doesn't make sense. And General Motors has already announced that very, very soon, about 25% of the cars that General Motors sells in the United States will be produced overseas. Why would we do something like that so stupid unintentionally?
Well, it's not unintentionally. Like I said, just follow the money. You know, find out who makes the money. I mean, in any situation like that, if you're looking at a crime, it's very simple. There's three elements. There's motive, means, and opportunity. Motive is just follow the money. I mean, I specifically don't know myself as to who would be stupid enough to do that kind of stuff, because to me, it's you're shortchanging yourself because you're shortchanging our society. But they've been doing it for so many years and getting away with it for so long that it just seems to be second nature to these people. They have no consideration or concern about the American people. Their idea is just, you know, make more money for a bigger yacht or a bigger plane or whatever the hell they think they want.
Well, don't you think George, that some of these people would like to have a world government, and their loyalty is more to this globalist view than to America?
I wouldn't even credit them as being that generous. I think they're just plain bloody greedy themselves. There's a few idiots out there who actually, you know, they justify and rationalize it in the framework of a world government and how good this would be for everybody else like that. But believe me, when it gets right down to it, it's a very personal thing. It's called dollars and cents. I just don't want to credit them because...
Have you ever read Mr. David Rockefeller's memoirs?
This delusional idiot figured he was God's gift to the human race.
Right, because he openly brags about being part of a secret cabal that is dedicated to changing the structure of our society, dedicated to this internationalist dream. And he says, I've been charged with being part of a secret cabal that's dedicated to changing the structure of our society. And if that's the charge, I'm proud of it. I'm an internationalist.
They are. Like I said, so it's like... go ahead.
Go right ahead.
No, it's like... It's hard to argue with David Rockefeller, A, because he's not here, and B, because he's dead.
No, he's not dead. He's very much alive, and he's working to bring about this world government he believes in.
Yeah, but like I said, it's a hard argument to make because you would have to have a tremendous background, to see how these people have been, their influence has been over history, because there's always been the people in the background throughout the whole of history. But I'm saying right now that the problems are so significant that you have to get down to the basics. You have to make the American people somehow aware that we're going off the tracks in a heck of a hurry here. And
hold that thought for just a moment. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, George, you go right ahead.
No, it's just like sometimes I, you know, like I sit here and I spend a lot of time writing, and in order to write, you have to get the information. Fortunately, I have the ability with the newsstand, the 4,500 magazines, and all these newspapers. I can get the information. But then when you go to, you have to sit down there and think, how can I solve this problem? Well, like any problem, you have to first isolate exactly what is the problem. And it gets so basic here, we're spending money we don't have to live in a manner and a method which is way beyond our physical abilities to sustain ourselves. So how do you get people to wake up to the fact that, you know, we've got to change what we're doing or it's going to get worse? That's why I write, I wrote Bankrupt, and the one I wrote before that was called Bernanke's Bubble, which basically said that these boys are making a bubble which is going to make all these other bubbles look like nothing, and when it bursts, it's going to wipe us all away. And then I sit, and you fax it out, and you do this, and you do whatever you can to get people to become aware of it. But the problem here is that you're running into the intentions of people who, the Rockefeller mentality, called the Obama mentality, or whatever else like that, they all in their own mind are doing God's work, or their interpretation of God, whatever you want to say it, and you have to get into their argument and get other people to look at their argument and say, look, hey, what they're saying won't work. You cannot just keep piling up the debt. You cannot use your charge cards and keep going on and on forever. It won't work. The Chinese have already basically said, excuse me, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on you. You know, I'm not gonna keep buying your worthless money. So now, Geithner just got back from China that he's trying to convince them to lend us some more money or buy some more bonds, whatever you want to say like that. But even they're not that stupid. Right now they're taking their couple of $1 trillion, which they've legitimately earned, and they're spending it in South America and Africa and places like that. They're buying real things like mines where you get minerals and things like that, planning for their future. But we're not planning for our future. The only thing I can see that we're planning is to how to spend more money that we don't have. In other words, we're way back here. Remember the first thing I wrote, Bernanke's hole? We're still digging the hole. We haven't even cognated on the fact that we can't keep digging. Because even if we keep digging, we're not going to get all the way to China no matter what we do. I mean, these people there, over there, they actually work for a living. But around here, somehow this government seems to have lost the whole plot. It's just lost the plot as to what was America and what made America great. You keep hearing different arguments. I heard an argument today that, well, you know, so what's the matter? We monetize the debt. You know, we just get out from underneath. You know, in other words, if we owe this guy a buck and we keep printing dollars, now we owe him 50 cents, and next thing you know, we owe him 25 cents, we give him the 25 cents and walk away laughing. That's what you call a technique of limited workability, because sooner or later, the guy don't want your dollar because he realizes it's going to be worth 50 cents. And when that happens, when the confidence goes, I think the quote I used in, I think it was Bankrupt here. Let me see, I got so many of these things spread out in front of me. But I said, if the confidence goes, you know, if you want to move, no, I don't know where it is, but you cannot print money, you cannot monetize your way out of a hole, because after a while, people will not respect your dollar, people will not respect your currency. But the problem is our currency right now is the world's currency. So if it goes south, the whole thing goes south. The quote I actually used in Bernanke's Bubble was, if you want to destroy a country, you destroy its currency. You destroy the perceived value of that currency, and the country will quickly fall to its knees. Keep it up, and it will fall over completely, long to recover.
And who said that?
I just quoted from Bernanke's Bubble. That's
all right.
The lines I used in Bernanke's Bubble there. I said, you know, what is Bernanke's Bubble? It's a speculative scheme that depends upon unstable factors that the planners cannot control. These guys have lost control of the game they think they're playing. These guys are not anywhere near as bright as they think, because no one would be stupid enough to actually just go down there and destroy the currency.
Unless, of course, you wanted to destroy the currency, well, and you wanted to destroy our country,
that's the way to do it.
We'll be back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And George was just saying that nobody would be stupid enough to destroy our currency, and yet that's exactly what you would do. And he has written an article called Bernanke's Bubble. You can find it on his website. But basically, he was just paraphrasing what is written in Alan Greenspan's book, The Age of Turbulence, where he says, there is no better way to destroy a nation than to debauch its currency, and not one person in a million will understand what's happening. Now, George is simply saying, but nobody would be stupid enough to do that intentionally. And yet, this is exactly what Alan Greenspan did. He knew what he was doing. We know he knew what he was doing, because after he left the Federal Reserve System as the chairman, why he went to work for PIMCO, which is one of the largest hedge funds in the country, and when everybody else was losing their shirts, when the subprime mortgage market collapsed, PIMCO came out with billions of dollars, taking Alan Greenspan's advice because of the situation he had created that he had to know was going to collapse. He wouldn't have told PIMCO what to do, and the things wouldn't have happened exactly as he told them were going to happen, and they would have lost money just like everybody else, but they didn't. Alan Greenspan knew what he was doing when he created bubble after bubble, when he lowered the interest rate to the discount rate to 1% and kept it there for a year, when he encouraged the people to buy these adjustable homes with adjustable rate mortgages, when he encouraged the use of derivatives, which, as Warren Buffett had said, these are lethal methods of mass destruction, currency latent but potentially lethal. He knew exactly what he was doing. I don't believe he's stupid at all. I believe he's brilliant.
Well, I think he's evil.
I would not agree with it. I wouldn't disagree. I think he's evil, too, but I think he knew what he's doing, and I think Bernanke does, too.
Yeah, when you look at the end result, then you can tell me who you're dealing with, okay? Because basically, that's what I'm saying. You have to go to the end of the line and see what happened, and then you can say, okay, who did it? I mean, when I wrote Subprimes for Dummies more than a year ago, the first line I said in it was, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. They are not far wrong. I give you the subprime mess. You know, where did it all begin? How did it all fall apart so fast? And then, you know, Greenspan's in there as one of the six causes of the subprime mess. You know, here's like you said, the boy who brought the money down to 1% so that anybody could afford anything. And, knowing full well, like especially you can see that when you read his book after he got out, I think he was actually quoted as saying that I think the appropriate rate for money should be in the low double digits. You know, in other words, 11% or something like that. And here's the guy who brought it down to 1%. And he wasn't that stupid that he didn't know what he was going to be doing, because he created a bubble in properties, in finances, and derivatives, and everything else like that. That boy ought to be taken on the shot. Same thing, like I said, with Paulson, who basically tried to bail out AIG and protect his own $20 billion investment. He's long gone, retired, worked with some other hedge fund, making his tens of hundreds of millions of dollars. But the damage these idiots have done, I mean, we don't really feel it now. I mean, every day someone comes in, they've been laid off, but I mean, we haven't quite reached the point where the society starts to really fall apart. Because now you've got these idiots saying, oh, it's getting better and getting rosy and everything else like that. But then the numbers are just against them. Like you're saying, 90 billion or 90 trillion or whatever. Sooner or later, that's going to start to bite. I mean, the bond rate's gone up now, so the mortgage rate goes up. And it just, everything you look at, I don't see it getting better. I see it getting worse, because they're denying the condition they're in. And that was the whole purpose in writing the little bankrupt thing, which basically said, if you want to get out of the condition you're in, the first thing you have to do is acknowledge it. And I don't think that the government, whether it's the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, or whoever else might think they're doing something up there, none of them want to acknowledge exactly where we are right now. But if you don't do that, you'll never get out of it. The situation inevitably is going to get worse.
Well, I certainly agree with you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We see the stock market going up. In fact, you know, it's really done very well this last few weeks. Why is the stock market going up? Well, if you look at the price-earnings ratio on the Standard & Poor's, you know, Standard & Poor's stock, and that's a large number of stocks, and the general stock exchange, really a much better evaluation of what's happening in the stock market than the Dow Jones. If you look at the price-earnings ratio on Standard & Poor's stocks, should be about 10 to 1, 15 to 1 at the most. It's 120 to 1. They're not making any profits at all. And yet, the stock market's going up. Why would the stock market be going up when the Standard and Poor price earnings ratio is 120 to 1? In other words, there's literally no profits being made by our industries, and how long can you continue, you know, simply having industries that aren't making any profits? I mean, a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then they all go down. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're in very difficult times. Our guest today is George Kelly, who has written a number of very provocative essays, and we'll tell you later how to get to his website. And we have Mark calling from Oregon. I'm going to ask Mark to call. So hang on. Our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
You can't stop dreaming.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Let's go to Mark, who's calling from Oregon. Hi, Mark. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Stan and Mr. Kelly. Good to speak with you. And something did occur to me. I just had time to tune the program in about the last 10 minutes, so I haven't heard the whole program, but it's pretty easy for me to pick up. I try to stay well informed on what the discussion entails. And I think the stock market, George, you had made a comment about the stock market. There's really nothing holding it up. It shouldn't be up. It should have continued on down because it has no true real assets of actual value in back of it. Same as with the economy, coincidentally. I think the stock market is really, George, a big fat lollipop for all those who will invest in the stock market, thus keeping people in a state of stasis while they do dismantle the economy.
Well, they pick their pockets.
Excuse me?
Well, they pick their pockets, yeah.
That's right. It's a diversion. It's a pea and shell game, and the pea and the shell is under one of the three, but people are always watching things going around, hoping that they're going to slow down and come still. They'll give that impression relative to the financial stability of the economy, and in the meantime, as you say, they are probably got the pee in their pocket by now.
Oh, yeah, and they're on the way out the door.
On the way out the door. Tragic thing is, I find, George, Dr. Stan, is I called into Dr. Stan's show a few days ago and asked him if he concurred with me on my gut feeling and also an intellectual perception that going to tie they, us and them, of course, but they're going to tie in the dissemination of a bioengineered flu out of one of the black ops laboratories and disseminate it in a very bad way through the vaccinations, which I think are going to do the major damage from what I can tell so far. Is not so much what's in the air, although it will do some damage, but much more extensive damage will be done by the vaccinations, and tying it together with a decline in the economy. And predictions between Gerald Celente, probably yourself, to some degree, Bob Chapman, they all fall, as far as the collapse of the U.S. dollar, into the late summer, early autumn. And coincidentally, when Janet Napolitano was giving her little speech while it was still going on, but kind of toward the end of it, but it wasn't over by any means. We, at the time, you know, several, 6 or 7 weeks ago, we really didn't know where it was going to go, if it was going to go full-blown or if it was going to back off. That's just how real it was.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Mark was just calling from Oregon, commenting on the possibility of the complication of the economy if we were to have a major flu epidemic worldwide that was just going to bring the economy to a stop. But that's a little off the line of what we're talking
I
about,
understand,
Mark. And
Dr.
I appreciate
Stan.
It so much your calling, and thanks very much for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you. God bless.
Bye-bye. And do you have any comment on that, George,
before I wanted
you to get your website out?
The whole thing, like I said, if 36,000 people die in the average year from flu, and you have the swine flu come along, and what have we lost, maybe 70 people? I don't know whether it's just a diversion or whether it's real or not. I mean, but it's not... I don't think I could tie the two together because I'm not that smart or I don't see it. But I'm more looking at what's real to me. And if a lot of people aren't eating a lot because they've got no money to buy the food, that's more of an, you know, that'll get you more people sick than anything else like that.
I agree with you. Well, let's go ahead and get your website out. How can people get your website, get your information?
Well, it's www.georgekellys.com. There's stuff that goes back for years there. But, I mean, if you just start in the past year with Bernanke's Hole, and let me see, there's Bernanke's Hole. There's one called Subprimes for Dummies, On the Road to Zimbabwe. How do we get there from here? There's another one, Would You Buy a Used Car from This Man? There's one with a picture of Obama when we put $6 billion in GMAC. And the first thing these idiots did was to drop the FICO score requirements to purchase your Cadillac Escalade from 700 to 621, which is basically subprime, and I said in the end, are we going to end up with an Obama lot in every city? Because what are you going to do with all these repossessions you're going to get? That was called Hope. Or no, that was called Would You Buy a Used Car From This Man? There's another short one here, which I actually published in the Washington Post again as a part of a full-page ad with the one with the Would You Buy a Used Car From This Man? It was called Hope, which is an interesting one because, well, Obama keeps running around promising hope and everything else like that. So I got so mad, I said, Hope. Hope is the last refuge of the incompetent. It is, I hope you can do it because I can't. It is in the extreme, I hope and pray that someone up above can do it because I can't. Better to become competent than fall into the trap of hope. Yes, work and effort are required. That was a short one I wrote. Then there's another one here, which is, Which Way Is Up? It's all about stimulus and not stimulus. Then there's another one, How to Fail Without Really Trying. The first part of that simply says it helps if you are stupid. It helps if you are a Democrat. It really helps if you are a really stupid Democrat. Most are. How do you fail without really trying? You follow the wrong philosophy. And that goes on for about 20 pages.
But, of course, remember that it was the Republicans that got this whole thing started.
They don't get off lightly. In the end, I said, borrowing or printing money to spend that we really don't have is simply not the way to go. In the end, it doesn't much matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican. Stupid is as stupid does.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to David calling from Illinois. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And remember, there's plenty of blame to go around, and it doesn't really seem to matter very much whether you have the Republicans or Democrats in the White House and controlling both houses of Congress, why the same policies continue decade after decade. Well, let's go to David calling from Illinois. David, do you have any comments at all?
Yeah, I got a couple of comments. Good afternoon, gentlemen. You know, it's incredible, gentlemen. What's allowed all this to happen is criminal greed criminal greed and criminal stupidity both. It is totally criminal. And like your guest said, Dr. Stan, very wise thing you said that, you know, before you can fix something, you have to go confront it, you know. And these guys are confronting nothing. You know, as you guys have been saying, the problem is two things, debt and lack of jobs. And they're doing nothing to fix either. You agree with that?
Absolutely. But just with regard to confronting here on the little one I wrote called Bankrupt, I said the Pollyanna approach that says everything is coming up roses or we have turned the corner is fatally flawed. It violates rule number one. Rule number one, to change a condition, you must first acknowledge and accept the condition as it is found to exist. Avoidance or denial only ensures that the condition will persist and that the condition will grow worse over time. You're absolutely right about that. That's where it all comes down to. They're not prepared or they don't have the balls or the brains to say, okay, this is where we are, this is what we have to do to get out of the hole that we've made ourselves. And it's not a question of who's right or who's wrong. It's just a question of, you know, who's got the brains and who's got the balls to sit there and say, we need to stop what we're doing and look and how are we going to change our condition. We first have to acknowledge it and then lay out a plan that people can agree to. And I don't think most people, when they see the whole of the circumstances, will agree that you can just buy your way out of a hole.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. When you read the newspaper, they will tell you, well, things are really so much better. We're not losing as many jobs this month as we did last month. Now, we're not making any new jobs, other than the government jobs, of course, but we're not losing as many jobs. We have over 6 million people, you know, that they have lost their jobs since the downturn began in December of 2007. We have probably well over 12 million Americans unemployed, and of course they keep telling us, but it's really great because we're not losing as many jobs as we were. What we need are new jobs, putting people back to work, and nothing they're doing is going to accomplish that. Anything else you want to say, David, before we let you go?
Yeah, I'm really worried, Dr. Stan, because, you know, these jokers, I think, are not going to do the right thing. They're just not. And so this country is here for the deepest depression we ever saw. I'm convinced, and it scares me to death.
All right, fine. Thanks very much for calling. God bless, and please get more people listening to our program. That's your job. Okay. Let's go to William is calling in from Connecticut. Hi, William. Do you have a question or comment? Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Go ahead, William. Oh, well, let's see. Okay. William, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go right ahead. Do you have a question?
Well, I want to comment. The biggest problem we face today is that we don't defend our personal property, our private property. Private property rights have been given away, and you know, both on a local level and on a national level. And the only way they can get away with what they do is by exploiting the property of others, not only our own, like our own personal goods, but our labor through the income tax, and they use our manpower as the military to promote their global empire. And if we start standing up and defending our private property rights and just say, no, you know, you're not going to use our resources and our manpower anymore, they wouldn't be able to get away with what they're getting away with.
One of the aspects I think I covered in Subprimes for Dummies, which is where the rights come from. Now, most people don't understand that the first right was, in fact, a property right. You go back to the Magna Carta, which is a document presented to King John in, I think it was 12-something, in Runnymede in England. They sat him down and said, look, the first thing is you need to leave us alone. We have to have our own property rights. It was first given to the dukes and the earls, but then it devolved down to the common man. So the first right was not the right of speech, religion, association, or anything else. It was a property right. In other words, you have the right to be left alone in your own little space. That, I agree with, concur with the gentleman here. It's just picked away a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. So in the end, your fundamental right that you fought for is not there anymore. It's a tragic situation, but you can see it in different aspects whenever you read a newspaper. But he's absolutely right that the first right to be that we should defend is the property right.
All right. Anything else you wanted to say, William?
Yeah, that, and along with manufacturing, you know, we can't exist as an economy without manufacturing the things that we need for our everyday lives.
But, of course, William, what they're really doing is systematically and intentionally transferring our production overseas. And as we pointed out repeatedly, we're giving $50 billion to General Motors, and they're going to reward us by shifting their production to China and to Russia and to South America. Why would we be financing General Motors when they're shifting their production overseas? Just doesn't make sense, to me at least.
Well, it does, like I said, if you follow the money, see who's making the money. But
all right, fine. Anything else you want to say, William?
No, that's all. Thank you.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Daniel, who's calling us from New York. And again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Daniel, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I do. I admire both your and your guest's erudition here. Now, my question is, if one were someone with the skills of a forensic accountant and a detective, perhaps, where would one look for evidence of criminal activity by the bankers and the administration that is prosecutable?
That's a tricky one to answer. Like I said earlier, I mentioned, like, to me, I saw Hank Paulson go from running Goldman Sachs. He put $20 billion in the AIG. When he's head of the Treasury, the next thing he does when AIG looks a little suspect, he moves to cover his own $20 billion debt. And the next thing you know, the American taxpayer is on the hook for $180 billion, or 80% of AIG, which is itself on the hook for another $1.2 or some odd trillion dollars worth of what they call credit default swaps. In other words, the insurance aspect on a derivative. I mean, that is such a mind-boggling thing to see and say, but I mean, I'll say it because there it is. I mean, I read it. How do you prosecute him? Who in the hell is going to prosecute him? You think Eric Holder is going to get off his backside and go after Hank Paulson or Timothy Geithner?
Yes.
I mean, when they're making the little deal with AIG, the go boy or the gopher was Geithner.
And you have to understand, Daniel, that when they actually wrote the legislation, the so-called Troubled Asset Relief Program legislation that was passed on the 3rd of October of last year, it was stipulated in there that they would never, of course, bring any criminal action against Henry Paulson. He could spend this $700 billion, you know, as he saw fit, but they forgot to tell him that he was supposed to spend it to keep the people in their homes and to buy up the troubled assets. Instead, he just changed his mind and gave it the money to his buddies, you know, in the major banks. One of them was his own bank.
Passed the money through 100 cents on the dollar.
Gave $125 billion to his friends at the bank.
With no negotiation whatsoever.
Right.
I mean, when you got a bad debt, you know, you're lucky to get 10 cents on the dollar. These SOBs got 100 cents on the dollar.
Well, of course, that was what AIG gave them the money.
That was
entirely different than the TARP. But you're right. And basically, the answer to your question is, Daniel, that nobody is going to be allowed to bring lawsuits because these people control both political party and they control a corrupt political court system that today has one in every 33 Americans, adult Americans, is in prison, probation, or parole. Do you want to fight this system?
Of course.
Okay, anything else?
I mean, speaking for myself, I remember that in Clearwater here there was a useless, idiotic roundabout, and I ended up taking the case all the way to the United States Supreme Court on my own dime and fighting corrupt judges. I mean, just absolutely corrupt judges covering the ass of other corrupt judges. It was just absolutely pathetic. That's on my website, too. It's called Sue 'Em All.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Daniel? We'll let you go.
It's just astonishing. Keep it up. Thank you much.
God bless. And let's go to Dave is calling from West Virginia. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Dave, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, sir. Comment. What do you think of the Mr. Geithner was in China the other day, and he was talking to some Chinese students, and I guess he stated that, you know, hey, our money's good, and you're going to get paid back, and you don't have to worry about the dollar. And I guess from what I read, the Chinese students, they thought that was very funny.
They're a lot smarter than most people here in America. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, absolutely. He's over there trying to assure somebody that he's not that they're on the up and up, and the other guy is just not that stupid. Like I said earlier, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. They're not about to buy any more of our junk money. And when he's saying, you know, that everything's coming up roses and we're written, I mean, sure, if I was a Chinese student, I would have laughed at him too. I mean, for them to do that in their society, to laugh or shame a visitor. Boy, they must be damn serious about it.
I would think it would be an insult.
It wasn't an insult. It was the truth. I mean, in the context, especially in a Confucian type of society, you would never insult a guest. So, I mean,
true.
I don't know who put him up to it or whatever, but I'd heard someone else made that comment that they basically laughed him out of the room because, like I said, they're, you know, don't fool us again because, you know. It's
brazen falsehood.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean... That's an incredible thing to happen.
Well, of course, the problem that we face, Dave, is that right now the administration will admit that the debt, which, of course, this fiscal year ends the 30th of September, the debt that they will acknowledge is $1.81 trillion, but it's probably going to be a great deal more than that, at least $2.25 trillion. So you got this debt, you got to pay for it. How are you going to do that? Well, you borrow the money. But what happens if people don't lend you the money? If the Chinese cut back on the amount of money that they're lending, and the Arabs cut back on the amount of money that they're lending because they're not making that much money from the oil, why then, of course, what you do is begin to monetize the debt. They call it quantitative easing. Quantitative easing. It's a fancy word for just counterfeiting credit, counterfeiting money, and putting it into circulation, which is down the line going to create hyperinflation and destroy the value of our currency. This is the great danger of what's going on today. And that's why Jimmy Rogers and some of the other very, very smart people are warning about the danger of hyperinflation down the line. Anything else you want to say there, Dave?
No, sir. That was a good answer.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so much, and let's go to...
There's just one point I want to...
We'll go right ahead, George.
In Bernanke's bubble, I say, what is Bernanke's bubble? And I define it as an inflation of the money supply beyond normal or acceptable margins. Then I went on to quote myself. I said, the money supply is, generally speaking, a reflection of the underlying value attributed to the productive capabilities of the society itself. But when more money is printed than reflects this underlying value, then every new dollar printed in it is itself devalued, while at the same time this new dollar devalues the value of all the existing dollars. This is a dangerous game. That's basically, so what has Benny been up to lately? Printing money in excess of the underlying value attributed to the productive capabilities of the society itself. He has been and still is monetizing the debt. That's where we stand today. And I don't see, I mean, in today's financial times, I have the main headline above the... It says Bernanke warns on the deficit. I don't know whether he finally got around to reading Bernanke's deficit. Now he wants to cover his ass by basically saying, well, we shouldn't really be doing this. We've got to do something else, and he doesn't know how to get out of it. So in other words, he doesn't want to be known as Bernanke's bubble. I guess he wants to be known as Obama's bubble. But either way, I mean, I don't care whose name you put on it. We can't keep doing what we're doing. We have to confront where we are, or we'll never get out of the mess we're in.
And, of course, what nobody is talking about is the value of the dollar in relationship to other currencies has fallen dramatically here in the last month or so.
We were
up to 89 on this best currency. At one time, we were 120, and then we went down to 70, then we went up to 89, and now we've started to drop, and we're down about 79 when I last checked. And as this falls, it means that the value of the dollar in relation to other currencies is falling, and it's going to have disastrous results. Hey, Dave, thanks so much for calling, and let's go to Tom in New York. Tom, do you have a question or comment?
I just have a quick question.
Okay.
What is going to happen to, like, say, for example, my mortgage as all these banks start cascading out as far as going under? Say my mortgage is through Wells Fargo. What happens if Wells Fargo goes under, and what am I left holding with my mortgage? And I'll just take my answer off the air.
All right, fine. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
I don't know the hardest thing to find with a mortgage is where in the hell it's at. Is it at mortgage? Is it where you think it is, or is it someplace else? And if they go underneath, you know, like most of these mortgages went through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in some regard. So I don't even know. First thing you have to do is assess where is the mortgage.
And I think that's very good. But Tom, I don't think you're going to get out away from your mortgage. And I think they're going to, of course, keep dropping the value of our currency so you can pay back with useless dollars if you can get them. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have time for one more question. Hang with us there, George. And let's go to Frank, who's calling in from Salinas, California. Hi, Frank. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes. If you were to make an estimate, what would be the chances that 2 or 3 years from now we'd be in a deep depression? Or do you think it's almost a sure thing we're going to head into a wild inflation?
Well, either one's going to get you in the same hole. I mean, you know, if you have that kind of inflation, you're definitely in a depression. I don't want to predict bad things, but I'm, you know, like I said, my whole effort is to try and stop the decline by confronting the reality of what we're in. If we don't, I can see where you're coming from. 2 or 3 years down the road, things basically are going to fall apart. I mean, that's stupid. I can call it the 16th century or whatever, but I mean, I don't look forward to it in any way, shape, or form. I just do everything I can to see how if we can stop it, that we need to stop it. But it's really tiring because you just read the papers, which I do every day, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better, despite what some idiots think. I think it's going to get worse, and I just hope. Maybe I shouldn't use that word. I'm just doing the best I can to see if people can wake up to the fact of where we are, so we can stop it declining any farther.
Well, I think, Frank, we're going to have a period down the line, how soon it's going to be, a year or two, we're going to get into hyperinflation, and then, when, of course, things get totally out of hand, we'll go into a depression. So I think that's the scenario we're going to see. At least we're going to have to wait and see, but this is the way it looks to me. First of all, they're going to be hyperinflation, and then they're going to have to, when things begin to totally collapse, and the whole economy begins to collapse, and the government function begin to collapse, and there's no money, and for the state and local government, then you go into a depression. We have a very, very dim future, and this is all totally unnecessary. Had they let the system collapse, had they let the major banks go into bankruptcy, had they let General Motors and Chrysler go into bankruptcy, then we could have started to come out of this, and we'd probably be on the recovery road right now. They have not done that. They're not going to, and I fear that we're going to have 10 years or more of very, very difficult times. And I do not believe that America will ever be the same again. I hate to say it, but that's what it looks to me. Anything else, Frank?
Is there any way for a person to, if you have with a mortgage, if you had some stocks, would you buy foreign stocks?
No, I would get into gold and silver, and I would get completely out of the stock market.
All stock markets.
You're not smart enough. I'm not smart enough to play the system. We're out of time. God bless you. Talk to you later. Bye bye.
God bless you. Thank you.
They don't play. They get played.
All right. We're out of time, George. Thanks very much. Well, really appreciate you being with us. Bye bye.
Appreciate giving me the opportunity to speak to you. Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and George is a very dedicated individual, and he's published these articles in the Washington Post, and he's doing these things because he's concerned about what's going on. And I'm concerned about what's going on. But the question is, how do we address what's going on, and how do we try to correct the situation? And as a physician, I will tell you that you could never treat a disease unless you understood the origin of the disease. And, of course, the origin of the disease is we have a brotherhood of darkness that controls our government. We talk about Timothy Geithner, but he's a member of the Brotherhood of Darkness, and Henry Paulson, and the people who surround Mr. Obama, and the people who surrounded George Bush. All you need to do is, of course, get my articles. Of course, you can read my newsletters at RadioLiberty.com. I hope you want to get our talk on the financial Armageddon. And basically, it goes into how this small group of people, and they're not very many of them, how this small group of people created this whole financial crisis intentionally to bring the whole economy of the world down because they want a world government. And they are moving, hell-bent to bring about this world government, and they will tell us, Henry Kissinger, one of the major architects of this, in an article that was published in the International Herald Tribune on the 12th of January, entitled A Chance for a New World Order, said that it's either going to be the international order or chaos, and they're going to bring chaos about the world to force people into this international order. You cannot understand what's going on unless you've read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Heard my talk on the forbidden secret, and now, of course, the talk on the financial Armageddon, So let me suggest that you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Get these items, and then, of course, if you're going to get the financial Armageddon talk, then you get the syllabus along with that, because it will help you to understand what's going on. But even more than that, of course, you need to understand that there are powerful spiritual forces that energize these wicked people. And, of course, at one point, while talking to George, talking about Alan Greenspan, he said he is evil. And absolutely, what he has done is totally evil, but he knew what he was doing. That's the issue. If you have not read my pamphlets called the financial meltdown, of course, we have them. They're available through Radio Liberty, and you can get them by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to read David Rockefeller's memoirs, we carry that where he talks about the secret cabal he's accused of being a member of and then working against the best interests of the United States, and says, if that's the charge, I am guilty. You'll find it on page 405. You need to read what these people say. So please go to our website at radioliberty.com, read our newsletters there from November, December, January, February, March newsletters, get the information, and then help us to get it out across America. And then, of course, we ask you to give serious consideration of joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day. If you can't afford to buy the book, Brotherhood of Darkness, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and just scroll down to the, simply scroll down to the section on DVDs, and it's posted there. And then please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope, of course, many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. There you can read our newsletters. You can certainly watch our DVDs. We have a section there which is links to other sites, specifically to YouTube sites. We hope you'll want to go there. And then, of course, you can listen to our programs there 9 hours a day. 9 hours a day on the satellite feed, or 4 hours a day live, or you can listen to our MP3 broadcast, you can listen to our blog broadcast or our archive broadcast. We want you to get the information, and we want you to get it to others. But the reason we have a problem is because there is a Brotherhood of Darkness. We even have a syllabus now. It's called the Membership List of the Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get the information. You need to help disseminate it, and then please pray for Radio Liberty.